Cincinnati was once an important center of railroad traffic, but passenger traffic declined through the 1950s and 60s as the interstate highway system took shape and air travel became more affordable. Could passenger rail soon make a comeback? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the potential route and timeline to connect Ohio's largest cities are Amtrak spokesman Mark Magliari and All Aboard Ohio Chair Mitch Radakovich. Thank you for being here, Mark and Mitch.
Pleasure to be here.
Mark, great to be back in Cincinnati virtually. I was just there a couple weeks ago.
Well, it's great to have you here virtually. Mark, tell us, Cincinnati does still have some passenger rail service now. What's available?
Well, you'd have to be up something close to O'Dark 30 over at the Museum Center, which is still our station in Cincinnati. We had a station once upon a time when we weren't in the Museum Center down along the riverfront, but we're at least in the best possible building in Cincinnati. But we're only there six times a week. Our train, the Cardinal, which leaves Chicago three times a week, drops down to Indianapolis, over to Cincinnati, across Kentucky, over to DC, then up to New York, sort of a big U-shaped route. Same thing in the other direction, only three times a week, and only in the dark of night, because the train's design is to make connections at both Chicago and Washington, and again in New York, to get people across the country. It is certainly not the level of service anyone at Amtrak will tell you Cincinnati and Ohio deserves. It is, it's still a useful service. And in fact, it's so useful the folks over in Oxford are putting in a station so the train will stop there instead of just sailing past it. But we've had hopes and others have had hopes, and Mitch and his organization have been working hard to get you more than just six trains a week at that glorious building north of downtown.
It is a glorious building. I'll agree with you there. And Mark, you kind of referenced this, but there has been more frequent passenger service from Union Terminal historically, hasn't there?
Oh, sure. If you tour around that building, the concourse that we are basically on a track next to the station, which is the only passenger track, but there was a huge concourse that went over all of those tracks. I guess that would be the west side of the station. And there were dozens and dozens of trains a day there. But the railroads, who were taxed in order to build a highway system to compete with them, and then taxed to construct airports and put money into aviation, basically underwrote their competition in the 60s and 70s. And some of these railroads, which to their mind were overbuilt, had too many tracks going to too many places with too few trains, were beginning to go bankrupt. And they went to Congress in 1969 and said, look, we are going bankrupt. You are forcing us to run trains, whether they make money or not, because it was the deal they made when they went to states and Congress to build their railroad network. Please relieve us of this money-losing responsibility. So on May 1st, and this is just the anniversary of Amtrak last week, 55 years ago, large sections of the U.S. rail network for people were abandoned, still carrying freight. And we were created to absorb that responsibility from those freight railroads. And there was a thought that maybe this wasn't going to last very long. It was just sort of a semi-exit from the business for the railroad industry. But then in the mid-70s, we had the first OPEC oil embargo. And I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember this. I certainly am. There were times you couldn't even put gas in your car unless the last digit on your license plate was the right digit. So Congress then said, okay, I guess we do need a passenger rail network. At that point, began investing in new equipment from Amtrak, because most of what we had was hand-me-downs. And we've survived and now built a network that last year carried 34 million people around the country. It's already this year, we are well past the pre-COVID numbers, and we're trending about 5% more than we did last year because people want a better choice, at least some of the time, than I-75 and I-64 and I-71 to travel from place to place. And for a lot of people, especially when we're there more than six times a week, we do very well in giving people a better option.
Well, Mitch, I know you are part of a group that's pushing for much more passenger rail service in Ohio. Tell us about the 3C&D route and the cities it would connect in Ohio.
Absolutely. Maybe for a tiny bit of background, we are at the precipice of a renaissance for passenger rail, kind of as Mark was pointing to, ridership is through the roof in the past couple of years. And a lot of that is being driven by federal investment. As a part of the bipartisan infrastructure law, a couple of years ago, $80 billion was set aside for passenger rail. And a large chunk of that is specifically for state-supported routes. So these are routes that would be a partnership between the federal government and state governments. And in Ohio, we actually have three different state-supported routes that are in progress right now, in addition to improvements to that cardinal that Mark was talking about. The one that you were asking specifically is the 3C&D. So this would connect Cincinnati, Dayton, Columbus, and Cleveland, likely with an intermediate stop between each of those major cities. And it would be multiple trains a day at speeds ideally comparable, if not, definitely competitive with driving, and opportunities to even increase those speeds over time.
Mm. I was going to ask you the vision for how frequently the trains would run. So this isn't going to be like a three times a week kind of thing. This is
multiple times a day. Exactly. Actually, as a part of the plan that's in progress right now, we are about to enter into this, they call it the service development plan, where they are actually deciding like the true frequencies and where the stops will be. But we like to look at some of the competitor states that we have, like North Carolina, where they actually started with three trains a day, let's be clear. And now they're up to five trains a day. So we can see that even if we start with three or so, it could even increase over time.
Ah. Wow. Well, Mark, what kind of impact could that route that Mitch just described have on Amtrak's Cardinal line that goes from Cincinnati to Chicago and all these other places you mentioned?
Well, I'm an Ohio native. I was born in Dayton, and I had hoped, my mother passed 3 years ago. She kept saying, when am I going to have a train? And I said, Mom, I hope it'll happen before you're gone. That hasn't happened yet, but it could. It nearly happened a few years ago. If you remember, Governor Strickland put in his State of the State address that there were going to be trains running in the next year or so, but he was defeated by Mr. Kasich. And that money that was going to go to Ohio, and it was set aside for Ohio, wound up going to Michigan, where there was a Republican governor who said, I want more service, and Illinois, where there was a Democratic governor, said, heck yes, I want more service too. And what happens is, when you have more service, and it's relevant, and it's reliable, it's at a fare that's defensible, even before we got to $5 and $6 gasoline, you find that downtowns get revitalized. I mean, you can go and over to Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. I hate to use another Big Ten school, but the downtown Champaign has major flagged hotels on them, a residential development, because it makes it easier for people to get from place to place without having a second car or even a first car. You can go to college campuses. If you go to Western Michigan University, where we have four trains a day passing five, if you count the one that goes all the way to Port Huron, Michigan, you can see grass growing in some of the parking lots of some of the universities because you can attend the college and not have to have a car there. I mean, Mitch is of the generation and the generation that's after him, where a car is not an aspirational purchase, where, gosh, I can't wait to be 16 so I can pay for insurance, license plates, and a car. That's not today's world. People want to do things behind the wheel, and are doing so, unfortunately, they shouldn't be, that are more productive than just driving the car. Everything you can't really do safely while driving, you can do productively and safely on the Amtrak train, whether it's reading, whether it's watching a video, whether it's having an animated conversation with friends or family. If you are someone who bills by the hour, you can make that time earning time, not just travel time. And driving is just so miserable. Having driven back and forth when I was at Mitch's meeting in Columbus a couple of weeks ago. And by the way, Mitch, you're on my LinkedIn. There's a picture of you watching me do a TV interview there. was miserable. I mean, it is people besides you yakking on the phone, behind you putting on lipstick or shaving, 18-wheelers on all sides, dodging potholes. Driving is not at all as pleasant as it can be and was, and has no real prospect of getting better because there's no real way to expand some of these highways.
And that's why at All Aboard Ohio, one of our main focuses is improving the freedom of transportation choices for all. Right now, in so many situations across Ohio, the only way that you're going to be able to get from point A to point B is with a personal vehicle. And frankly, that isn't the freedom that we aspire to be as Americans, right? There's so many other things where if like the system was set up in a way that you were that constrained, people would literally be rioting. And so that's why it's one of our focuses at All Aboard Ohio is making sure if you want to get places, you should have choices on how to get there. And it's not just trains. It's also buses, streetcars, bike and pedestrian access. All of that goes together to form a robust transportation network.
We're talking about the status of an effort to connect Ohio's biggest cities via passenger rail. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Mitch, if this 3CND route does get built, has the frequency that you were talking about, I mean, that'd make it possible to live in Dayton and work in Cincinnati and get here easily, maybe go to college in another town, Columbus or Cleveland, and still live where you want to live. I mean, is that part of the vision here?
Absolutely. And actually, one of our keynote speakers at our recent summit was the transit guy, who's a transit influencer. And we talked about how cities like Dayton and Springfield are prime for redevelopment around where those stations would go in. We're talking, we could be building hundreds of new apartments in these towns that have struggled in the past couple of decades. And so we see it as a huge opportunity.
Yeah. Well, Mitch, people have been talking about this 3CND line for years. What's the status? I mean, there's a whole process involved in this, right?
Absolutely. And I know that we get a lot of hesitation because people have seen it get so close, as Mark alluded to as well. So we are moving right along in the process, not only for the 3CND, but for the other two routes as well. We have all three of those have been submitted for their phase one of three within this program from the federal government. There are currently in progress of getting the approvals from the Federal Railroad Administration in which they would embark on phase two, which is ready to be funded in Ohio. After phase two, which will probably take probably about 2 years, then we go into construction planning, which is where it is like getting ready to put the shovels in the dirt. I would say at that point, there's really no turning back. So it's pretty exciting to see it moving forward.
Wow, that is exciting. Well, we are going to continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, what can oral health tell us about kidney health? This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about the status of an effort to link Ohio's biggest cities by passenger rail. My guests are Amtrak spokesman Mark Magliari and All Aboard Ohio chair Mitch Radovacic. Said that wrong. Radovacic.
There you go.
Got some consonants mixed up. Sorry, Mitch. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We do have a caller on the line. Let me get her on connected with us. Hi, Sharon. Thanks so much for listening. What's your question?
Hey there. My question is if there's a chance for a rail line from Columbus to Pittsburgh. I have one sister in Pittsburgh, one in Europe. And after traveling in Europe, what we've got here is absurd. And as I get older, I want to take a train in America.
Well, thanks, Sharon. That is a great question because, Mitch, I bet you're going to talk about the Midwest Connect route.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when I was talking about how there are three state-supported routes in Ohio, one of the other ones is the Midwest Connect, which would connect Chicago, Fort Wayne, Lima, Columbus, and Pittsburgh with, again, multiple trains a day at competitive speeds. So this route is being sponsored by the Metropolitan Planning Organization in Columbus, and as well as the city of Fort Wayne, Indiana. And it's also moving forward at the same speed as the 3CND. So Sharon, you have something to look forward to in the upcoming couple of years.
Yeah. So stay patient, Sharon. It sounds like folks are working on it. And I think that's a great question. Thanks so much.
Well, there's palpable interest in Columbus in multiple directions. And in fact, their convention center is built on the footprint of the former Columbus Union Station. And they already have a plan. They have renderings and everything at the convention center about how they would house a station in Columbus in that building. They want very much to host it. Up at Cleveland, at the other end of the 3CND, the mayor has very aggressive plans as the stadium is going down up there on the lakefront to redevelop their lakefront. And our station, which right now serves four trains a day, two each way, also in the dark of night, would be redeveloped into a multimodal center. So across Ohio, whether it's in Cincinnati or Cleveland or Columbus or Crestline, remember, Mitch, the mayor of Crestline calls it four C's and a D, finally giving Ohioans another choice besides windshield time, which is wasted time for a lot of folks.
Yeah, I remember when it was just called the three C's, so Dayton got the D added. So who knows how long the alphabet name could be by the time it's built. Mitch, you referenced this earlier, but this whole project got a real boost from, I think it was the 2021 Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Has the change in presidential administrations had an impact on this, the way things are moving or the speed or momentum or any of that?
So this is one of the things from the Biden administration, which has largely been untouched, which has been hopeful to see. And so the biggest change that we've seen is at the Federal Railroad Administration, where a significant amount of their staff was let go. And so there have definitely been changes in the speed at which things are being reviewed at the federal level. But I'll say that there are still extremely passionate individuals who are working there at the administration and are being really good partners to our local municipalities and to the Ohio Rail Development Commission, which is kind of the Ohio's version. So we're really hopeful seeing that it continues to move regardless of administration.
Super. We now have Mike on the line. Hi, Mike. What's your question or comment?
It's a comment, really. When I was Mitch.
Oh, did we lose you there, Mike? Well, my computer says you should be on. I'm not sure what happened. We're going to try to come back to you, Mike. Let me put you on hold. We have Sam on the line. Hi, Sam. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I hope you don't lose me, too. It just had me thinking, though, so recently we sold the rail line, our own rail line, and I just kind of wonder how much of an opportunity we forfeited, given all the things you're saying. I feel like everyone who voted to keep it kind of understood that. It'd be one thing if they had, in lockstep, sold the rail line and built the light rail system that we have. But they were sort of disjointed efforts. And, public transportation is really going to be the main driver, as you said, of urban renewal. And, even though we got this $1 billion, doesn't really compare. And, I guess finally, the museum center, which is beautiful, we put the bare minimum into keeping it. But we, even if the building aside, we really haven't invested. And I don't know. I just wanted to know what you guys' hot takes were on. The elephant in the room.
Thanks, Sam. Let's go to Mitch for his hot take.
Yeah, it'll probably be a little less hot than you want it to be because it is in general a different discussion. That rail line was primarily used by a freight rail company, I believe Norfolk Southern. Mm-hmm. And actually the same way that we're developing the 3C and D route, it's going to be operating on Norfolk Southern and CSX rail lines anyways. So it's kind of regardless important to have a close partnership. I would say that issue, the sale of Cincinnati Southern, also has a lot to do with infrastructure improvements in the city of Cincinnati. And so even though, it's our job is just to advocate to make sure that the money that is available to our city is being spent in the correct way. And that's why we also are focusing on advocating for making sure bus rapid transit gets implemented correctly, advocating for expansion of the streetcar, and ideally in the longer term, advocating for things like light rail, for instance, a train to the airport. I know a lot of people want that.
Yeah.
So Sam, keep questioning and keep pushing to make sure that money is getting invested in the right places around the city.
Yeah.
But in fairness to the Commonwealth of Kentucky, I mean, the folks in Louisville have been, and that's led by the city and their Metropolitan Planning Organization, are working very hard to connect Louisville to Indianapolis to Chicago, where it's possible to have an alternative to I-65. There are places where alternatives are still possible, whether it's I-75 north and south down past Cincinnati. But there are places where we've made decisions over the years where it's not possible at all. There was a train until 79 that went from Pittsburgh, started in the East Coast, through Columbus, Indianapolis, and to St. Louis and Kansas City. But because we all thought we'd be having bubble cars with George Jetsons folding them for us, or robots, I guess we were getting some of those, the rail line between Indianapolis and Columbus is severed. You can't go there anymore. So we've painted ourselves into some corners that we're trying to work ourselves out of. And folks like Mitch and his organization, 8,000 strong, and others want another choice besides wasted windshield time.
Okay. We now have Carl on the line. Hi, Carl. What's your question or comment? Hi, Carl. Can you hear me? I'm not sure what's going on because I don't hear Carl. Do you? Okay. Well, I'm going to have to put you on hold, Carl. I have a question in the chat. Will the trains be electric or diesel? Do we know that, Mitch?
Yeah. So in general, they're going to be, like I said, operating on the Norfolk Southern and CSX tracks, which are diesel tracks right now. It would need to be an effort to electrify like the freight rail as well. So yeah, they will be diesel.
Okay.
But still, to point out, there is, even though it is diesel and not electric, there are still tremendous environmental benefits coming from the fact that we're taking a bajillion cars off the road instead. So it's still a benefit.
Bajillion, that's
and
a technical
modern
term.
Modern diesel locomotives exactly. Don't have the emissions issues that older diesel locomotives do.
Yes.
I mean, are they better than they were? Yes, they are.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Carl. I'm glad I got to ask your question. I'm sorry we couldn't hear you on the air yourself. So don't know what's going on there. But thanks so much for calling with that great question. Mitch, we were chatting about this a little bit before the show started. You know, flying has gotten a lot more expensive. It's gotten a lot more complicated in recent years, and especially the past few months. Do you think that's really boosting demand for passenger rail?
I think it absolutely is. Not only flying getting more expensive, but even driving. I mean, gas right now is $5 a gallon. So we're seeing the impact on multiple methods. Again, when we talk about how we don't really have very many transportation choices right now, our two choices are extraordinarily dependent on the cost of fuel. And we are seeing that essentially the third option, which is don't get to go anywhere, is becoming more of the option for people, which isn't okay, right? Mm-hmm. We still need to live our lives. We still need to get to healthcare and education and our families. And so in the parts of the country where rail transit is already available, we are seeing the demand skyrocket. We're seeing trains sold out. And so I think it's pushing even more the pressure that we need to have alternatives here in Ohio.
Yeah. We have David called in who said he's a big supporter for more passenger service. He remembers when it was really good and it's great in Europe. So thanks for that call, David. We sure appreciate it. Mitch, do you think that expanded rail, passenger rail, provides benefits even for people who don't use it? I mean, tell us about that.
Absolutely. I'll focus on two different points. The first is expanded passenger rail has direct economic benefits. So you're going to see, just in the same way that we all are happy when the economy is doing well because of other things, right? You're going to see the hospitality industry flourish. You're going to see more young people wanting to move to the Ohio cities instead of cities on the East and West Coasts because there's ways to get around, again, that don't require a car. And so because of that, even if you're not riding the train, you'll still see economic benefits. But additionally, people who are using cars to get around are going to have less people on those highways clogging them up for them. Less people who are doing windshield time, like Mark was talking about, on their phones when they shouldn't be, causing crashes. And so I think that those will all be benefits. We're also planning here in the upcoming couple of months, as the 75 highway gets shut down with the Brent Spence Bridge, we're going to be putting some banners up to make sure people are thinking, maybe I shouldn't be on a train or I shouldn't be driving a car right now in traffic.
Yeah. You know, Mark, we were talking about the cost of fuel and the impact that's having on everybody. Is that having an impact on Amtrak in terms of Amtrak's costs?
Sure, because we have outside the Northeast where our trains are diesel powered, yes. So it has an upward pressure on fares, but right now we've been managing it.
Okay. We got an email from Elaine who writes, thank you for including the history of the grant we had to get passenger trains in Ohio, but Governor Kasich turned down the grant and sent the money back. An excellent example of the importance of state government and state politics to regular citizens. Follow the money. It was with the auto and oil industry lobbies at that time. Ohio lost out in significant economic development, clinging to old idols. That email is from Elaine. Well, gosh, so Mitch, very quickly, how much would it cost to build out the 3C&D route? What are the latest estimates, and how fast could it be finished and ready for passengers?
So two great questions, which I can't give you extremely concrete answers. Okay. Those are both going to be decided as a part of this step two of the planning process. What I will say is we anticipate it to be significantly less than the cost of the Brent Spence Bridge.
Wow.
I mean, we're talking significantly less.
Shade on the bridge there, Mitch. Good for you.
We have, I believe it's about $10 billion a year set aside for highways in Ohio, and it would be a fraction of that to build something that's going to benefit millions of Ohioans. And we would expect to see it probably midway through the 2030s in completion.
Okay. So. And will the state be expected to pitch in as part of this?
Yes. So as a part of that bipartisan infrastructure law, the state-supported partnership, the state pays about 20%. Mm-hmm. But then as you get into operations, which generally are profitable, the state is making the money rather than the federal government.
Okay. We got a quick call from Clay who says, what kind of fuel do European and Asian trains run on? Why don't we just go ahead and go with electric trains now?
So if we were to retrofit our entire rail network, it would cost a lot more than the Brent Spence Bridge. And as we know, it's very difficult to get funding for anything right now. And so, yes, it's not the final state ideal version. In the same way, I would love for it to be a 200 mile an hour train, and it's not going to be to start. But we got to get our foot in the door, and we got to start changing the way our society thinks about transportation. And then longer term, yes, we can think about making it even better.
Okay.
We can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Exactly.
Well, I have been talking with Amtrak spokesman Mark Magliari and All Aboard Ohio Chair Mitch Radakovich. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Up next, a new study finds an important link between oral health and kidney health. This is Cincinnati Edition.